So it's very interesting, actually, that I'm coming after two speakers who also brought the rum bun. We didn't collude, actually, beforehand, but I'm quite interested by that. Anyway, so I have got a handout for those who know me well. Give me a minute. Thank you, though. Thank you so much. I just want to... this is being recorded, isn't it? So I have to be careful what I say. I want us to go on this journey together, okay? So that means that no looking over the pages before you're allowed, okay? I know that's very schoolmarmy, and I hope it doesn't sound patronising in any way, but I'm just trying to build up a picture here, so I want you to come along for the journey. I hope there's enough for everyone, otherwise share, obviously. So I was asked to speak about the stucca part of this evening, but I'm just going to say a couple of words by way of introduction. So this book, Return, Daily Inspirations for the Day of War, The Days of War, this is by Erica Brown. For those of you who don't know Erica Brown, it's a fabulous book, absolutely outstanding. I can't recommend it enough, actually. It has 10 chapters, one for every day of the Assyrian Main River. And they're short, they're, you know, 3 or 4 pages. They're very easy to read in the sense that they're short, but they're very punchy. Anyway, Erica Brown was one of the women who sat around Rabbi Chaim Brovender's kitchen table in the old days, before there was Michlelet Brewery, as it was called then, now Midrashet Linderbaum. And she was one of the 6 to 10 women who said, you know, no, we're learning Talmud around your kitchen table, can't you make an institution that does this? And lo and behold, they pushed hard, and we're all very grateful for that. Anyway, so she now lives in Silver Spring, Washington, just by Washington, D.C., and she's written several books, so one of the Magid books on Yonah also she's written. Anyway, she says some wonderful things about tshuva and about tefillah and about tzedakah, and I just wanted to mention this part of her introduction. She says it's customary to increase one's performance of mitzvot, and study during this period. She says good habits breed better habits. Okay, so we're going to think about that as we go along. Keep that in the back of your mind. So, page one. The word tzedakah is generally translated as charity. Now, that's very interesting because, of course, in the Torah, certainly in the Tanakh, the word tzedakah does not appear in that context at all. Okay, so let's just have a look. This is from the Cambridge Online Dictionary. A system of giving money, food, or help free to those who are in need because they are ill, poor, or have no home, or any organization that has the purpose of providing money or helping in this way. Okay, that's very nice. Pretty, pink, fluffy, sounds good. Okay, there's a second by the Merriam-Webster online dictionary that I use usually more, actually. Generosity and helpfulness, especially towards the needy or suffering. And then this word, benevolent, which is a very interesting word. Benevolent meaning bene, good, doing good, okay, giving good to the other. Okay, a gift for public benevolent purposes, and lenient judgment of others. So I always look on kind of local or non-Jewish websites to start the thought process as to what things mean. Because these definitions of these words are how they're used colloquially. And it is incredibly interesting that the word judgment comes in to the concept of charity, I thought. Okay, if you have a look now at the word tzidkut, righteousness. Interestingly, I brought you very few because there was very little about righteousness. They have the word righteous, obviously, and they assume a righteousness about from the word righteous. But if you look up righteousness, up comes self-righteousness, which has a very different meaning. And that was profoundly interesting, but I didn't bring you all that stuff. But anyway, okay, so definition of righteous, acting in accord with divine or moral law, morally right or justifiable, and it's used nowadays, who knew, as genuine or excellent, but that's just by the by. Now, Wikipedia, which I very rarely bring, but it was so fabulous, I brought it for you today. So, they use the word tzedakah specifically, and it says a classical Hebrew meaning is justice or righteousness. So, well done, Wikipedia. They did pretty well, I thought. But commonly used to signify charity. So, this is why I brought this for you, because I think it's excellent. It is begadol, and certainly historically, right, used to refer to justice or righteousness, which we'll get into. But generally, certainly colloquially, how do we use it if you're talking about sadaqa? We use it to mean giving money to the poor. That's how we generally use the word. And lastly, if you have a look at the bottom of the page, it says, more broadly, sadaqa is considered to be one of the three main acts that can positively influence an unfavourable heavenly decree. This is one of the best written Wikipedia articles I've ever seen, right? So that was spectacular, because it really forms a lovely framework for the things I want to think about. Okay, we can turn over. Right, so let's begin. What I wanted to think about is where the word sadaqa appears in what context. So we know that on the Rosh Hashanah davening, we'll start with Musaf, we have Unatane Tokef. Okay, so this is a very powerful, quite a frightening tefillah, quite a frightening prayer, and it is a call, as our earliest speaker with tshuva mentioned, it's a call to change, it's a call to the discipline of action, it's a call to rehabituation, making ourselves human beings, better human beings. And it is filled with the message of being noticed, right? In general, when I speak to my kids about celebrity culture and things like that, anonymity is a wonderful gift, right? You don't want to be out there. You don't want to be noticed. And often, especially in the Gemara, they talk about stories where people were remembered. Who wants to be remembered? I don't want to be noticed. I want to, hide under the radar, because to be noticed is to be incredibly vulnerable. This tefillah makes us remarkably vulnerable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts us as a valuable human being and then assesses our behavior. And that's quite a frightening thought, right? It's quite scary. So what actually happens during Natane Tokef? Well, if you have a look on page 3, I hope you can turn over. We have this last part that we've been talking about this evening, right? Ushuva, Usfila, Utstaka, Ma'avirin es Ro'ah HaKazera. This is a remarkable piece of tefillah, I think. Here we are standing in front of our Kodesh Baruch Hu, very vulnerable, very open, very human, right? As the rabbi said just now, we're very human. We stumble, we make mistakes, we're not always so focused in our tefillah amongst all the other things we're supposed to be focused on. We're not. And yet, this is what it says. It says, if we do something, if we act in some way, the whole thing can be changed, right? It is a remarkable feat, actually. I mean, Rabbi Sacks, in a very Rabbi Sacks way, talks about how this is one of the most magnificent gifts that the Jewish people brought to the world, the concept of tefillah, the concept that our past does not determine our future. We're all very limited as human beings, and we feel limited by the weight of the things that we've done. When Rabbi Rowe spoke, I thought he spoke fantastically, eloquently, actually, about how we self-limit, right? How we think about ourselves and our choices as getting smaller and smaller and more limited the older we get. And actually, we don't have to think like that because we have tshuva. Now, it doesn't mean we don't have responsibilities. We can't walk away from our spouses or our children or our families or our jobs, easily. But it doesn't mean that our choices are as restricted as we think they are, right? We lose imagination the older we get. But here in the Tane Tokef, we are told, you don't need to do that. There's a framework, there's a system. This is the system, right? And I've written here, have you got a big arrow on your page? Right, theurgical transformation, right? What is theurgy? Theurgy is the intervention of a supernatural force in human affairs, or the effect produced by such an intervention. Definition 2, the art or technique of evoking the aid of divine or kindly spirits. I'm not so keen on the kindly spirits part of that sentence, but never mind. That is very interesting. That is what we do on Rosh Hashanah through the Aseret Yemei Tshuva and on Yom Kippur. We evoke HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rachamim, but we also habituate ourselves to better behavior. And in so doing, we achieve this, right? We are able to achieve it. Now, what we've spoken about, the last two speakers spoke, I think, in a sense of the weighty job that lies ahead, not in a negative way, but it is weighty, right? And there's something about this particular line in the tefillah that should make us feel more hopeful, that should make us feel invigorated, that should make us feel that we can do it. Actually, we can do it. Okay, so I've written audacious here, a theurgical and audacious transformation, and I use that word purposely. So if you turn over, here we go. Okay, so this pasuk from Yeshayahu is something for me that is a remarkable pasuk. You're all probably familiar with it, but let's just read it. L'chuna v'nivachacha yomar Hashem im yuchateichem kashanim kasheleg yalbinu im yadimu kutola katzemer yihiyu. So in a very Navi way, this is a very poetic line. It has like Lashon Kaful, it's written twice, the same message is repeated. But what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to the people through the Navi? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it looks like a red stain, right? You spill red wine on the white tablecloth on Shabbos, it's a nightmare to get out, right? It's a nightmare. It's there, it's present, can you really get rid of it? Red is a very strong color, the imagery is very powerful. And here HaKadosh Baruch Hu says through Yeshayahu, I'm telling you, it's not that a bit of stain remains. Nothing remains. It will be white. Have you seen snow? It's white. It's white. It's completely white. There's nothing left. Have a look at the Rashi here. Look at the last part of the Rashi, Devar Acher, and then right at the bottom. Okay, we'll read the whole Devar Acher. Lechuna v'nivcha ma katuv l'malam imenu chadlu hara lamdu heitev v'achar shetashuvu elai lechu v'nuchacha yachad lohodi ani. Okay, so I'll just read the translation. This is from Sfaria. Cease from doing evil, and once you return to me, go and we will argue together. Now, and you'll speak to me. And this whole pasuk generate this concept of having a conversation with God. L'chuna v'nivavacha yomar Hashem. Let's get together and talk. The earlier Rashi says, we'll have a conversation. Who did what to whom? Let's try to work it out. Let's talk about it. That's the kind of theme of Rosh Hashanah and the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And then at the end, and the word audacious here, I think, is exactly the right word. Rashi says the following. This is what we will say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Asinu masha aleinu. We've done our bit. So we've stepped forward, we've done the tshuva, we've done the tefillah, we've done the tzedakah, and then what do you say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says Rashi? Aseh ma sha'alayich alecha. That's how you say it, right? Now you do your bit. We've done our bit, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You made us a promise in Yeshayahu. You made us a promise that if we attempt, if we try, if we do our bit, you will respond. And your response is a completely clean slate. And we say you have to do your job. And I think that this is, again, making demands that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fulfill that promise is a remarkable thing to find in the Rashi. Okay, let's keep going. Now let's look at the Rambam. Now, we're not going to look through all the Rambam. Because we've had a pattern. But what I wanted to do here with regard to this issue of tzedakah is think about the Rambam not just as, in this work, this is the Mishneh Torah, so the Mishneh Torah is a halachic work, ostensibly, but as has been revealed this evening twice now, this is a chazaka the third time, really, the Rambam speaks philosophy through the Mishneh Torah too. You know, he tells us something about the way tzedakah works in the world, not just about the chiyuvim that we have and what we are obligated in, but tells us something about the nature of what it means to give charity, right? That's what the Rambam says, not just telling us how we have to do it, but what the concept of tzedakah is in the world. Like, it's a more esoteric thought process, not just a system of halachic of laws. Okay, so I'm not going to read the Hebrew because of time, but let's just have a look here at number 7. So you find, interesting, just so you know, that the laws of aniyim, of giving to the poor, matanas aniyim, is in Sefer Zra'im, because of course it begins really with the payah, the corners of the field, and so on and so forth. So it's about the agricultural laws is where it emerges in halacha. Anyway, if you have a look at halacha 7. There are 8 levels of tzedakah, each one greater than the other. Okay, we're on source 3, halacha 7. There are 8 levels of tzedakah, each one greater than the other. The greatest level, higher than all the rest, is to fortify a fellow Jew and give him a gift, a loan, form with him a partnership, find him work until he is strong enough, whatever that means exactly, strong enough. We can think about that another day. So he doesn't need to ask others from others. Okay, so here we're going to see categorizations of how to give tzedakah. Okay, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Number 8, one level lower is one who gives tzedakah to the poor and doesn't know who he gives to, and the poor person doesn't know from whom he receives. Number 9, a lower level is one who gives tzedakah and the giver knows who he gives to, but the poor person doesn't know who he receives it from. Okay, number 10, one level lower is when the poor person knows whom he takes it from, but the giver doesn't know. Okay, and so it goes on. 12, one level lower. Oh, I haven't written 11 here, have I? I don't know why. 11, one level lower is to give to him with one's own hand before he can ask. One level lower is to give to him after he's asked. 13, one level lower is to give to him less than one should, but with kindness. And lastly, one level lower is to give to him begrudgingly. So what I want to say here about the Rambam is he is, in this sense, telling us that tzedakah is a way in which we behave, not just an obligation, okay? And here we can clearly see how justice and tzidkut, righteousness, fits in, okay, with tzedakah. He is telling us how to become a righteous person, right? How to behave in a way that tells you you're thinking about other. If we look at the 3 words, tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah, we find that they are different worlds. Tshuva is a world of our own, right? We are concentrating on our behavior, the things that we did wrong, whether between ourselves and God or ourselves and other human beings, but it is about our lives, right? It's all about us. Who am I? What am I doing in the world? How am I functioning in the world? And how can I better function in the world? Tefillah is about relationship. It's about me and God, right? It's about how I communicate with God. And in that sense, you introduce other into this framework of being a better person. And then tzedakah, of course, is the ultimate other, where the self is not even relevant, right? In tefillah, the self is relevant. You're talking about a relationship. But in tzedakah, the self is not relevant. Tzedakah is about the other person's needs. And the Rambam makes clear that the other person's needs take precedent really over everything when you're giving tzedakah. He says if you do it in this, you know, shameful way, basically, you know, he says it's tzedakah, but we feel very uncomfortable about it. Okay, so there is a sense here that these 3 are the ways in which we live in the world and function in the world, and tzedakah is about other people. And therefore, of course, it makes complete sense that tzedakah has to do with justice, okay? Because being a just person is about knowing about other people. It's about relinquishing the self in the relationship and thinking about the needs of the other person. Okay, and the other thing I think that the Rambam does here is he says that giving tzedakah is transformational. One of the things we're trying to achieve between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is some form of transformation. So Rabbi Rowe spoke about this in terms of implanting a seed, right, becoming a different human being. And the way in which we practice these 3 parts of our lives, but specifically tzedakah, transforms the way we behave in the world. All these halachas are all very lovely, and we get up in the morning and we do them, yay, right? But they're supposed to have impact. So halacha works in the sense of a kind of non-Californian model, right? When I think of the Californian model of, you know, expressing oneself, right? I need to, I don't know, eat green, mushy stuff, or I don't know, whatever. It's good for me. I feel it inside, and I need to express it. I need to stand on the street corner and shout poetry. You know, I'm making it up. Gwyneth Paltrow sort of style. Anyway, sorry, Gwyneth, if you're listening. Okay, I hate being recorded. Okay, so, but halacha, on the other hand, Torah, on the other hand, the way in which we are told we have to behave works in the opposite way. The way in which we behave impacts on the self, right? In other words, when we give tzedakah, we become people who are kind. In other words, it impacts on us. We might be rotten people, right? Selfish, frugal, right? We don't want to give tzedakah. We're not interested in giving tzedakah. Nevertheless, we are obligated to keep Shabbos, tefillah, whatever it is. We have to do those because those things are supposed to impact upon us. They're supposed to change us. They're supposed to transform us. And tzedakah specifically is about other people and therefore is supposed to transform us into these just and kind and righteous people. So, we're nearly done. If you look on the next page, who are tzaddikim? Like, what do we think about the word when we think about tzedek, tzedakah, tzidkut, okay, in the Torah? So, we have two main examples, I think. And the first one is Yosef. We call him Yosef HaTzadik. And in that sense, a tzaddik is somebody who overcomes desire. And I've brought you the psukim here. So you have the Yuma'en pasuk. You can see in verse 8, when Eshet Potiphar, Potiphar's wife, wants him to sleep with her, and V'Yuma'en, he resists. He says no. And he doesn't do it, and he gives reasons for it. And then if you have a look in Pasuk 10, it says, Vehi kadabra el Yosef yom yom. And I think that yom yom is, again, very important, actually, in these 10 days, because it is about the ability to keep saying no, right? These 10 days, just like Erica Brown said, we do push ourselves, and we don't do it to trick God. It's not some kind of loophole. You see how good I am these 10 days? Come on, God, you can be a little bit more, you know, merciful. It's not about that. It's about those ways of being in the world impacting on us. And this is about the yom yom, the trying every single day, that every single day, those things that are difficult for us may still be difficult for us. Okay? That is the point of the yom yom. This is one of the shalshelets. You know, there's four shalshelets in the Torah, the note. So we'll talk about those afterwards, don't worry, not relevant now. But it is relevant in the sense that it has more impact. This is a difficult thing to do, okay? But why do we call him a tzaddik? Because he overcomes his own desires, okay? So not, again, what is overcoming one's desires? Not thinking about the self, okay? It's about not thinking about the self. And if we have another look at the word tzaddik, where it comes in. So it comes in terms of Avraham Avinu. So you have this on page. Do you have this on page 7? Oh yes, page 7. Sorry, it's a different page in my book. Okay. So this is where Avraham Avinu talks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, also actually in a very audacious way, right? That Moshe Rabbeinu does this again in Shmot and Bar Midbar, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to get rid of all the people. I just want to destroy the people. They're behaving badly. Different situations, different time. They don't behave so well during the Midbar in general. But we have complaints. We have Avodah Zarah. We have the Chet HaEgel. You know, we have different times where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, I'm going to kill all the people. I'm just going to make a great nation through you, Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, how can you behave like that? And God responds. And in fact, he says, Salachti kedvarecha, which we say, right, in our liturgy, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds as he said he would in Yeshayahu. I know chronologically they're not in that order, but as he said he would in Yeshayahu, because of, in that case, Moshe, and here, Avraham's idea of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Okay, so what does Avraham say? Let's just look at the end so we can finish soon. Chalala la chashofet kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat. Right, God forbid that the world's greatest judge, right, should not deal justly. But throughout his arguments, he talks about tzaddikim. Now, we know that Stone definitely had people who didn't behave so well. Rasha'im, we might call them. But he uses, I think it's very interesting, that he uses the word tzaddikim as their sort of counterparts. And in a sense, did we really think, or do we really think, that there were tzaddikim in Stone? Like, what does the word tzaddik here mean? I think it's a very interesting use of the word. And I think what it means is people who are doing their best not to be rasha'im. It seems clear to me that there were not necessarily 50 or 40 or 30 or even 10 eventually, right, tzaddikim in Stone. But the word tzaddik here, I think, or one can certainly read it as, is a person who just is trying not to do rishut, right, not to fall into that pattern of bad behavior. And lastly, I just want to look at the Amida in chakras. And we know that you have this on page 7 also, don't you? Yes, okay. So here we have the bracha that we say every day. And we call HaKadosh Baruch Hu Melech Ohev Tzedakah U'Mishpat. So this idea, I think, is that we bring the concept of tzedakah with justice, okay, so that they're joined together. We don't see this in the 10 days that we're in, of course. What do we say here? This is the problem with this argument, by the way. I've already thought about this. But very interesting here, because what do we say during this bracha now? HaMelech HaMishpat, right? Which I think is very interesting, because actually during the year we say Tzedakah, Melech Ohev Tzedakah Mishpat. It is a fascinating and very telling example of the way in which Tzedakah, the thinking about other, right, impacts on justice, and how they're related in this bracha, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described here as the king who loves both tzedakah and mishpat, and that they work together. What happens during the Aseret Yemei Teshuva? It just says HaMelech HaMishpat. I can't answer that question because I don't know. But I want to say three things really in conclusion. The first is that pasuk in Yeshayahu, which says that this works, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the capacity or wants to change the way our future looks, is something I think that is an optimistic way of looking at these Aseret Yemei Teshuva and of Yom Kippur. I also want to say that the three methods of achieving that are given to us in the tefillah are tshuva and tefillah and tzedakah. And therefore, what do we need to concentrate on? All of them, right? It's not enough to work on the self. It's not enough to work on the relationship with us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we also have to work on our relationship to the other. No, not our relationship. We have to work on other, right? We're not necessarily involved, okay? Okay. The tzedakah part of what we do is about focusing on other people. So that's the second thing to say. I also want to add that Rashi, where it says, Asinu Masha'aleinu, we did our job, and we make a demand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is audacious, but it's in Rashi. And therefore, we should feel, I hope, confident that we can say, I have worked, as long as we do the work, I have worked, and I have an expectation of this relationship, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I am working, I am promising, I mean what I say, but please respond in kind. And in doing so, the point is to become those righteous people and to fulfill what Erica Brown says, in the sense that good habits breed better habits. I wanted to get it right. Okay, so good habits breed better habits, but we have to believe in it. We have to be hopeful. We have to read that pasuk in Yeshayahu, and we have to believe it. We have to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to us, I'm telling you, they'll be white. It's a shift of the CV, right? In other words, when we do something wrong, it doesn't mean there are not consequences, right? If we've stolen something, we have to repay it. If we've broken something, we have to repair it. I'm not suggesting that everything is becomes nullified. What I'm saying is, it's not written down, Lo Rishum Klal, says that the Abar Banel brings a Gemara from Shabbos, actually, when he's talking about this Pasuk, and he brings this Gemara, and the Gemara says that B'nai Yisrael come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu making these demands, basically, and they want to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu personally, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, because you want to be with them, these things that you've done wrong will not be like a listed, they won't be on your CV, they'll disappear. True, you have to pay people back, that there are consequences. That's maybe imprisoned, I don't know, whatever it is that you have to deal with as a consequence. But will they stay on your CV? Do you become determined by your past? You do not. So your future is open as long as you rely upon and believe in the hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu offers you. Anyway, you should all have a Gemara Chasima Tova.